am super conscious that there are people in here with businesses already. I'm not going to pretend that I have the answer to everything, but I've got my answer and what's worked for me over the last 18 years. And as I was reflecting on what to share with you, because I called it Adventures in Entrepreneurship, because in a way I think entrepreneurship is an adventure. You know, it just is. It's not like you have adventures when you're an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurship is adventures. You just don't get a comfortable ride ever. And so when I was reflecting back on what am I going to share with you guys, I started off thinking about what's the story that I've had, where have I come from, where have I got to, and how could I share that story? But then I thought, well, that's my story. It's not going to educate you. It might make you laugh, or it might make you cry, it might make you inspired, or it might make you bored, but it's just a story. So then I start thinking, well, what's more universal than my story? And it feels to me that there are certain principles that I have found in myself. I've either learned them along the way and really embodied them, or they're already in me and I've utilized them. But either way, there are certain things that are just who I am and how I operate as an entrepreneur, such as when we had our conversation earlier about multiple businesses versus one. I find in myself so far, I'm only 48, so I've got another good 50 years left, but I find in myself that I can only give my energy in one particular zone right now, and that seems to be how I operate, and I'm okay with that. Which comes to, you know, one of the key things is do you. It's like, if you love having multiple businesses, have that. If you find that your passion goes into one direction, do that. There's not an answer to this, it's only like being you. So I really started to think about my life over the course of the 18 years I've been running a business, and what's emerged for me when I think to myself, what's been the consistent threads, the consistent kind of the rock solid parts of what's made me an entrepreneur. And it's a bit like when Steve Jobs talks about looking back at the breadcrumbs and figuring out your life from the breadcrumbs rather than thinking of what's ahead. You kind of look back, oh, so those are the things that make sense to me as I look back. And so I just want to give a little bit of background to me as an entrepreneur, and then share my principles. And as I share my principles, just try to reflect on how they've shown up in the real world rather than just give you a set of principles which sort of stand isolated from actual life. And the reason why I'm going to give you my background very, very briefly, because I wasn't so aware that time was flying by, is that I was mentoring a group of people about a year ago, I think it was, and one of the ladies in the group heard my story, where I've come from and this sort of thing. She said, oh, I didn't know that about you, Nick. Now that I know that, I can actually listen to you. And she said, I thought you were middle class and that you were brought up with a silver spoon in your mouth, yeah. And that you've just, it was all easy for you. And I was like, wow, it's amazing what you can give off.
Yeah.
And yet it's not necessarily the reality. So I, just to give you a super quick bit of background, I and by the way, none of this feels relevant to me. Like, I am who I am right now. But background's kind of interesting because it gives you context for what's made me who I am. So my background is, I am a working class kid, I guess you could say. My dad was a scaffolder in the dockyard of Plymouth. My mum was a housewife. And we grew up with a lot of, definitely didn't have money problems, but money was tight. Like, I recall when I was probably about 12, my dad, he was in the dockyard and he somehow won 5 quid. It must have been like, it's probably 1981, 82. And he won £5 in some sort of lottery or some sort of quiz. And he came home and he was really proud of this 5 quid, which presumably must have been a decent amount of money. So he says to my mum, June, I've won £5, I'm really happy. He was already all excited. And my dad was not a happy guy, really, because he was living the wrong life. So this particular night, he came home, he was kind of happy, and he put his hands into his pocket, and he was searching around for this 5 quid. It was gone. And he literally ripped the trousers off his body because he was so angry that he lost this £5. He put his hands in his pockets, and he ripped his trousers right off his body. I remember it so well. Turned out that when he came from work, he took his trousers off, laid them on the bed with the £5 in, put on a new pair of trousers.
Only a man.
And I honestly think that to some degree, that conditioning around money followed me through a lot of my early life. And it's funny, as I was thinking about what are the things that jump out at me over the last 18 years when I think of myself as an entrepreneur, or even beyond that, when I think back to being like 21 years old and leaving my degree and getting a job and that sort of thing. And what really jumps out is the hinge moments, the sort of the really critical moments where I kind of could have easily given up because things were tough. Like, entrepreneurship for me has not been easy. I've loved every second of it, give or take, but it's not been easy. Like, I seem pretty damn good at making money, but I'm really, really good at also getting rid of it. And, or at least I have been. And one of the biggest lessons I've learned is actually understanding how business works and how you have to hang on to money in order to create a greater, stronger business. But certainly for the first part of my business career, like I'm talking from 2000 up until about 2014. So about the first 14 years of my 18 years of entrepreneurship, it's been like this. To the extent of two insolvencies, I started my first business in 2000. And I was earning at the time £16,000 salary. I was organising conferences for this guy, and I'd been a bank manager, and I got divorced, and I gave my wife everything, and basically, cut a long story short, I ended up in this really tatty little job, earning £16,000, living in a bedsit where every time the guy above had a shower, his dirty water would come through my ceiling. Some of you know this story, but it's absolutely true. Every time he had a shower, his dirty water would drip through into a bucket that I had in my in my studio. It was literally a bed, a massive pile of books, and a bucket. That was literally my life, which is why, by the way, now when I describe my lifestyle to you, Pankaj, you can see why it's pretty damn good. Because it used to be a pile of books, a bucket and a bed. And so I used to get this bucket and tip out his dirty water. But slowly his water spread across the ceiling, short fused all the electricity. And eventually I had this little lamp, and all I'd do is my life was just reading books. This, by the way, is age 28. So I'd gone from like having a bank manager role with a decent salary to being 28 years old with a pathetic little salary and total destitution. But going back to your point, Priscilla, I was like the happiest I'd ever been, because I had my...
Freedom.
Totally, had my freedom. I cannot tell you, I'd gone from a life of childhood straight through to being married at the age of 21, engaged at 17, married at 21. And at 28, I said, enough's enough. I left, gave my wife everything, went to the studio flat, water through the ceiling, happy as a sandboy. However, I went on a blind date at the time with this girl, and she said to me, would you say, she was a city chef, and she said to me, Nick, would you say you're an ambitious person? I was like, nah, ambition, that's behind me. I find it so funny now, at the age of 28, so full of wisdom, and yes, my ambitious days are behind me. I had my bank manager days. But you know, there was absolutely a drive. Like, I was super happy. I'd go to Greenwich Park and I'd see the squirrels prancing around and gambling in the fields like lamb do, and I was just so happy. But I also knew inside there was like something else there. I wasn't sure what it was, but there was something else there. So I went to work for this guy doing conferences, and he was a lovely guy. It was my first experience working for a small company. I worked for banks and so on. Now I was working for a small company, and you see what it means to be an entrepreneur, the struggle, the pain. I remember him doing his, like having a bookkeeper coming once a week, and he'd always get me, Nick, chase this invoice. And I was always chasing invoices, and I was really good at chasing invoices. I'd ring up London Borough of Lewisham, hey, you said you're going to pay this. And I got really good at getting results for him. But I saw the pain of entrepreneurship, but I also saw the amazing creativity of it. You know, we'd have these meetings as a small team of five, kind of like, what's the next conference we'll do, and the power of creativity was astounding. I just loved it. Sadly, my boss, and I really, really like him to this day, but he was a very classic entrepreneur that doesn't know how to give up control. So he's super autocratic, super controlling, and I got sick of his attitude. So one day I said, you know what, it's beneath me to work for you. And I literally walked out of his office and didn't go back. And in that time I was like, right, I need to figure out what to do with my life. I know, I'm really good at copying things. So I'm going to copy his business model and create a conference company. So this was 2000. At that point, I was earning 16,000 quid, still living in the flat with water through the ceiling. And I saved everything I could. Maybe about, I don't remember anymore, it was a long time ago, but probably saved about £1,200, something like that. That was literally everything I had in the world. To the degree that, like, when I ran out of electricity, I had a pound coin machine. Mm-hmm. And I'd have to ring my mum and say, Mum, could you put £10 in my bank to get these pound coins? I mean, I find this is staggering now. This is 1998. And I was like, grown man, what an idiot. But anyway, so there I was, putting these pound coins. And somehow, I don't know how I did it, but I saved up this 1,200 quid. It was everything I had in the world. And I made my first two conferences. One conference was on children leaving care, and one conference was on, I think it was on child protection. It was, I'm pretty sure. And all I had was a little fax machine and this mail shot I sent out to these to local authorities, social services and health and this sort. And I was just like, that fax has got to ring, because if that... Fax! let's just hold for a second and think. Fax! That's old. So anyway, see, here we are, 1998. Sorry, 2000. There was a mobile phone, the old Nokia style. But year 2000, fax machine. I'm just like, come on, fax machine, ring. So 2000 brochures go out to local authorities. I'm like, come on, fax machine, ring. A day goes by. Nothing. Two days to go by. Like, come on, this is my life on the hold here. 3 days by, nothing. 4 days, and comes through two bookings for looked after children, and then I was waiting, three more bookings, and then my first conference on child protection totally bombed. My second conference, looked after children, 11,000 profit.
Wow.
Just like that, I was off. Two more conferences the next month was on human rights and domestic violence, 44,000 profit, second month.
Wow.
In my head, I was convinced I was going to earn, even if I was like wildly successful, £50,000. Like, I had a piece of paper about this big. My business plan was literally this big. And it was just number of delegates times delegate fee equals revenue, minus hotel venue costs, speaker costs, marketing costs. And I literally worked out, I was like, oh my god, 50,000 quid. If I earn 50,000 quid, like, life's never the same again. 55,000 pounds in the first 2 months. I was like, how did that just happen? By the end of the first year, with ups and downs, I've made £105,000 profit.
Wow.
And 450,000 turnover. And I, like, it was proper fairy tale. You know, when... have you experienced that, where you have such a big shift that life is never the same again?
Yeah.
I'm curious, have you...
Yeah.
So one of the things that taught me is that for everything we do in coaching, which is often an inside journey, sometimes the journey has to be outside. Because when you create something that you can't argue with, you can't hold the belief that you used to have. And so this £105,000 said, Nick, you cannot hold the belief anymore that life's about not having money. Or can you? Because that £105,000 I spent entirely. Spent it on a new car for my girlfriend. And I remember her actually ringing her mum going, guess what Nick's bought me? He's bought a new car. We then bought this four-bed house. And then guess what happens when you make £105,000 profit?
Tax.
You get a tax bill.
That's the problem.
You get a tax bill. You get a tax bill for £21,000.
Not that.
£21,000 corporation tax. Then I got a VAT inspection.
Ooh.
In the same year as my £21,000 corporation tax, which I'd forgotten to pay. Guess what they found? £12,000 of unpaid, not unpaid VAT, but just bad accounting.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden I'm faced with £33,000. In that time, I'd also got very carried away. I'm sort of curtailing this story for time purposes and chocolate purposes, but in that time I'd also leased this machinery from Pitney Bowes, which is this crazy mailing machine where you put the brochure in one end, it got folded, then folded again, then put into an envelope, then the envelope got sent through, got labelled, got sealed, got dropped into a sack. Oh, you're all... I'm waiting for this chocolate to be delivered.
Thank you.
At that time, so this is, I'm just going to jump into year two. Year two, I get this, I do this conference on homelessness. And the chair at the time was Chris Holmes. Anyone know Chris Holmes?
No.
Probably Lord Chris Holmes now.
Oh, yeah.
He was the director of Shelter.
Oh, yeah.
Now, at that point, my business was just me. Sole trader, well, I was a limited company, but just me. He says to me, Nick, do you think you could organise a series of conferences from Glasgow down to London on the Homelessness Act 2002? And without batting an eyelid, I said, of course, Chris, no problem at all. Next thing, I'm thinking, oh my God, I've got to do 9 conferences from Glasgow down to London. It's just me. So I go on a fast-track recruiting process where I suddenly build a team of 5 people. In 1 month doing the Shelter conference, we made 70,000 profit. By the end of that second year, how much profit do you think we made?
Don't show me. Go on.
So in 1 month we made 70k. Mm-hmm. By the end of the year, what do you reckon we made?
A few mil.
2.5.
Oh, just profit.
Yeah. Profit.
Okay.
350 grand. If you've made 70 after the first year, it'd be good gosh.
70 in 1 month. 105 I mean, what, first year.
Yeah, brilliant.
70 first in month. The first in 1 month.
1 month.
No, 20.
20 grand.
20.
It went down.
You said zero. You did well.
What happened?
Because we splurged it in that 1 month of success with shelter, but I then had to hold the team for the rest of that year.
Okay.
So it was costs. It was bigger offices. It was bigger machines. It was bigger everything. So I thought, right, need to sort this out. One, by the way, this is the biggest mistake I made in business. Oh, probably. Probably. Honestly, I don't remember, Priscilla. It's a long time ago, and I was terrible with money.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. The biggest mistake I made was doing this, is I got rid of the team one by one. Because I thought what I needed to do is cut costs. I didn't. I needed to fight my way through that. Yeah. I needed to fight through to a new phase of growth, but I didn't. I cut my team one by one until it was just me again.
You did austerity, and you shouldn't have.
I did austerity. It was like, whoosh, big breath in, whoosh, big breath out, and that was the mistake. I should have held that breath and fought through it, but I didn't. I got rid of them, so it's back to just me. Then I've suddenly got this massive machinery. So I say to Pitney Bowes, "Hey, Pitney Bowes, come and pick this machinery up. I think it's a 3 month notice, isn't it?" And they said, "No, 3 years." But the irony is, they actually came and took the machinery, then they told me it was 3 years. Jeez. And I was like, "Hold on, you could have told me that." So I'm suddenly left with a £35,000 Pitney Bowes bill, a £21,000 corporation tax bill, and a £12,000 VAT bill. That was insolvency calling. But some of you might judge me for this, but some of you might not. You're coaches, and you'll figure out how to deal with this when you go home tonight. But the fact is, I went insolvent, and I didn't pay the corporation tax, and it was tough. Let me be honest. I'm not going to tell you all the detail of this, but my first 12 years of business was like that. Two insolvencies, two divorces. And as a result of the second divorce, I sold everything I had, moved on to a canal boat, lived on a canal boat for about 2 years, and in that time, I was letting my business just tank. And I suddenly went, "Oh my God, Nick, you're on the edge of bankruptcy." I was in Paddington Basin, year 2008, just at the start of the massive credit crunch. Paddington Basin, beautiful sunny day, I have bankruptcy papers at the back of the boat. I'm about to sign them. And I know that when I sign bankruptcy papers, I lose everything. The boat, I've got no cash. I'm losing the boat and whatever else I've got, which is very little. And I think to myself, why? Why do it? Why not fight back from this? And so I decided at that point, this is where it all gets really interesting for me. I decided at that point, no, this is it. This is where the new Nick begins. 2008, this is where the new Nick begins. And I'm going to fight back from this. So I sold my boat for 15,000. I bought it for 26, I sold it for 15. So I made straight away, I made an 11,000 loss. And I took that 15,000 quid. You guys don't know this story much, do you? So I took that 15,000 quid and I put it in a brown envelope. I was homeless. Literally, properly, fully on homeless. So I moved into my mate's ex-wife's bedroom. Thankfully, she had two single beds. So we had separate beds, and I put my water cash under the bed, and I decided to do something really meaningful. Do you know what I did?
Went to camp, base camp.
Gave it away.
What are you guys here for?
Oh.
Coaching.
I set up my first coaching school. Oh. That was the genesis of where you are today.
What gave you that?
I'd been a coach for a long time, working with the public sector, but I'd also bought a license to sell a coaching school's course where Rob and I both trained, and I hated what they did. Mm. We all learned girl model. We all did a lot. What you do as foundations was my coach training back then.
And coaching academy.
No, it's called Catalyst, doesn't exist anymore. And I hate what they did, so I started writing this big email to the CEO at the time, who I still know, and he's a nice enough guy. And I wrote them this big email saying, I can't sell your course anymore, not unless... ... And I suddenly went, hold on, why am I telling him what to do? Mm. By the way, this is what I mean about if you want to change the world, do something. Don't just moan that other people aren't doing as well as you would do if you bothered to get off your ass. I mean, do it. So I was like, okay, why am I telling him what to do? I'll do it. So I decided to create my first coaching school, which was the Smart School back then. And it wasn't easy. It was still like this for quite a long time. 2013 was the point where I decided to rebrand and build Animas, and that's what you guys are a part of now. What you don't know, I changed from the Smart School, and you know, Smart School did okay. I think we did like 30,000 profit and 50,000 profit. It was meagre, but at the time it felt like survivable. I mean, it was really small. But I made a big deal of it. Like, I mean, talk about PR, I really made it feel like it was succeeding. In 2013, I changed to Animas because I really wanted to do what mattered to me. But I woke up about 2 months afterwards. And when did you join us? When did you join us?
Just after you moved from Smart School to Animas.
2013. I woke up in Folkestone in my little one-bed flat. And I was like, this isn't going to work. I just cannot, this isn't going to work. And for the first time in 13 years, I thought about getting a job again. And it's amazing to me now, I look back and go, my God, like I've come so far in 4 years. It's stunning to me. Because you'll hear how we're doing now, it's just ridiculous. But I thought, okay, I'm going to get a job. I'm in Folkestone. So I get my phone, I look for jobs in Folkestone. All I can find are carers for old men. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to wipe some old guy's backside. I could run the whole coaching school myself. Get rid of my team, get rid of this, get rid of that, and just do it all myself. And that's much better living than, you know, I mean, if you like wiping out a guy's backside, great. But I mean, I didn't want to do that. So I was like, I'll just go back to doing everything myself. And this was for me the moment where I committed to building the business I want to build, which is where we are today. Because at that moment, I knew, well, a little bit like my bankruptcy critical moment. It was old men's backsides, or it was the business I really wanted. There was no going back, so I went back.
It's a tricky one, isn't it?
It's a tricky one. Which do you go for? When it's a 50-50, coin toss. And that brought me to the point where I was like, no, this has got to be the business I want. And the rest is history, in the sense that I started to focus on building team, building the course I really wanted to. So we entirely changed how the course was constructed, what was in it. So it came from what I really wanted to do, not what I thought was acceptable to the marketplace. The brand suddenly felt like that's really what we're about. And I started to learn about business. I mean, I kind of had mentors before, but nobody really taught me how business works. Not really. So for instance, in the early days of the Smart School, I was selling the course for 1,200 quid. Like what you spent, what you guys spent 4,000 quid on, I was spending, it was a little bit smaller and blah, blah, blah. But basically, 1,200 quid, I was making a loss. And I thought, because I was looking at top line revenue, I thought it was successful. It wasn't. Bottom line profit is success. In fact, even that's not success. Cash in a bank is success. And I just had to learn these lessons.